Hey, I'm Bex Lindsay from Getting Emotional, and I'm this week's guest on Metapod.
This is Metapod, where we unpack the web's most interesting podcasts and the stories behind them.
So Getting Emotional is all about the feelings you might have felt, but had no idea there was a name for. I take feelings from different cultures, different places, different times, mash them all together, find a guest, and have a lovely chat.
Hello and welcome. This is Wendy, your host here on Metapod. Thanks for tuning in for another conversation about an interesting podcast out there that you might not know about yet, or one you already know and love. If you know someone who likes to discover new podcasts, share this or another episode of Metapod with them. You can find Metapod on the web at metapodshow.com. My guest this week is Bex Lindsay. She's the creator and presenter of Getting Emotional, a podcast about obscure emotions that you may have felt but had no idea there was a name for. If you're interested in the intersection of culture, language, and emotion, you'll find Bex's podcast, Good Listen. Each episode is devoted to discovering a feeling or emotion and the cultural context of its origin and use. Have you ever experienced phago or felt limerence? Most likely you have, but Bex and her guests each week on the podcast will help you find out for sure. When she's not podcasting, Bex is a radio presenter, and if you're in the UK, you might know her from the national station for children, Fun Kids Radio. She's been recognized and awarded for her work in radio and podcasting, and most recently, the Getting Emotional podcast won silver at the 2022 British Podcast Awards. Aside from doing great work and sharing her enthusiasm for discovery with listeners, you'll hear that Bex is a fan of the Scottish indie band Belle and Sebastian, and chocolate. She really likes chocolate. I mean, who doesn't? Or maybe there's a special word for person who does not like chocolate. Anyway, a big thank you to Bex for spending more time behind the mic for this conversation about feelings, emotions, and moods, as well as culture, music, and chocolate. Also, it was really cute of her dog to make a brief appearance. So here's our conversation about Getting Emotional. I hope you'll check out other episodes of the show and Metapod. You'll find links and more info at metapodshow.com. All right. Hi, Bex. Welcome. It's really exciting to have you on Metapod to talk about Getting Emotional.
Honestly, I am honored you even asked me. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
And by Getting Emotional, I mean your podcast, of course. So we'll see how many emotions we can go through in the course of this chat. Tell us about the podcast and what inspired you to create the show.
Yeah, sure. So Getting Emotional is about feelings you might have felt but didn't realize at the time. So I found there were lots of feelings all around the world, from different places in time, from different corners of cultures that maybe described how I was feeling or had felt previously. And I had no idea that those feelings existed. And I thought, I wonder how many there are out there. And the further I looked, the more emotions I found. I think the first one I found that really resonated with me is called Legit, which is from a tribe in the Philippines. It's a kind of howl of the soul. It's not quite anger, not quite sadness. It can be productive. It can be a big old mixture of emotions. And I think I found it, and it mostly relates to grief. And I'd lost my mum, and I read about this emotion and I was like, oh yeah, that's it. That's what I felt. And it's such a lovely thing when you feel a hand has been put out there in the darkness and it's for you. And nobody else had ever shaken my hand in that way before. Nobody else had given me Legit. And I thought, oh, it's good to know I'm not the only person who's felt this. And then I kind of fell into this rabbit hole of looking for more and more emotions, basically.
You felt a sense of relief, it sounds like, in finding this term or label for something you felt.
Yeah, exactly that. I think it's all about feeling, less alone and also feeling valid. And I think one of the reasons I liked calling it Getting Emotional was because so often emotions are seen to be a bad thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're if you hear about someone, oh, she's getting emotional in the cupboard, you think, oh, she's having a nervous breakdown. But, you know, you never hear that phrase in a positive way. And I found there were lots of positive emotions, lots of joyful emotions as well. And I think it's really important to celebrate all of them. But yeah, I think for me, it was an overwhelming feeling of not being alone in that emotion. Mm-hmm. And then realizing there were so many other words and feelings out there that nobody had discovered, or not nobody, but, you know, the general public hadn't discovered. And I could try and research them and make them hopefully interesting, chat to people who felt them, and also make them quite quick, because my podcasts are pretty short.
Yeah, no, that's a nice thing about them, actually, I'd say. So I find emotion fascinating because it's a basic human mechanism and experience. But on the other hand, it's really complex. And even though most of us have a common understanding of what emotions are and we all feel them, do you have a working definition of emotion for the podcast?
I think I play pretty fast and loose my definition of emotions, because they're coming from everywhere in different places. Mm-hmm. And so I did this emotion called limerence, which is a kind of romantic addiction to a person. It was by far and away my most successful podcast, because most people listen to it have felt it at some point. But I was also very aware that I think I mentioned this in the podcast, you know, you might come at that feeling and think, actually, that's more of a state of mind, or that's more of a psychological issue than a feeling or an emotion. And so I think I'm pretty loose with what I decide to cover, basically. Mm-hmm. I did one podcast called Brabant, which was a podcast inspired by Douglas Adams, who I don't know if you know. He wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And when he was a kid, he would take random place names, old place names of places that often don't exist anymore, and he would repurpose their names to mean something else. So Brabant was a place, I think, in Europe somewhere, that he remade into a name for an emotion. And, you know, it's not in a dictionary. It's not a dictionary definition. Brabant isn't a feeling that you'll find in some kind of in dictionary. But I like the idea that that was also a thing. So I think I take invented feelings as well.
Okay. And you feature a different feeling or emotional concept in each episode. And you talk mm-hmm. to guests who have something to say about the feeling in relation to an activity or sometimes a job that they have. How do you decide who can best speak to a feeling or concept that you're working on?
Often it's just who will talk to me.
Okay.
No, I do try and match people. I've been really lucky with my guests, I think. So Brabant, for example, the one I was talking about before, is about the pleasure you have in pushing someone's buttons and the joy that you take in kind of teasing someone and seeing how far you can get them. And I thought, well, a comedian does that every day with their audience. You know, they really push buttons. They see how far they can get. And luckily, I knew a really good comedian called Nish Kumar. So I invited him to chat about that, because I thought that would be great for him. And sometimes I speak to experts who maybe haven't felt the emotion, but are certainly great at helping me explore it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So for limerence, for example, I spoke to a neuroscientist called Dr. L. So it does, I try and think if there is an interesting person that will match an emotion, or an interesting profession, I should say, mm-hmm. who do I know in that industry, or who can I approach in that industry to try and help me out a little bit?
Do listeners contact you about feelings that they're curious about and they really want you to feature on the show?
And not so much. I think because people don't know any obscure emotions. I get a few that pop up a lot, like Schadenfreude, which obviously is a bit more common, and a few feelings that people will recommend to me or will send. But so I have this really long spreadsheet, like an Excel spreadsheet of emotions. So I've got, it's like emotion, it's where I found it, where it's from, possible notes on it, if it's similar to another emotion, because a lot of emotions you find have kind of two emotions have developed in two countries mm-hmm. and are called two different things, but are exactly the same feeling, which I find, again, really interesting. And so people occasionally do send me things, and I'll either add them to my list, or I'll say, I've got it. Don't worry about it. We're covered. Thank you. But I have a lot of reaction to the episodes where people are like, oh yeah, we felt that. Yeah, I didn't realize that was a thing. And that's a lovely thing when people get in touch with you and they say it's really, it's resonated with them. That's the kind of interaction I love.
Okay. I was looking if there were any Dutch words on your shows, but I don't think there are yet.
No, you know, I have my spreadsheet. I don't think there are many. If you have any, please do tell me.
Well, one comes to mind, which at my house, we've had a small debate about whether it truly is a word that with a translation in other languages. And that's the Dutch word for, I guess, cozy, gezellig. And Dutch people, Dutch culture loves to insist that this word is not translatable, where some people disagree on that. So
how do you spell that? Because I may well actually have that on my list.
It begins with a G. G-E-Z-E-L-L-I-G.
I may have it. The concept of coziness is really interesting, because that is something that you find, especially in more northern countries, I think, those emotions, for obvious reasons, I guess. Yeah, it's interesting. Those, like I say, there are different feelings that have been called different things, but are about roughly the same thing. But like you say, the thing about not being translatable. Oh my goodness, the amount of websites I've been on of like top 10 most untranslatable words in the world, and then they're always translated. It's not. It doesn't quite pan out.
So how do you come across words? I mean, do you just go search for them? Do they come up in conversation? I mean, types of ways that you find words?
Yeah, it's very much thank goodness for Google, basically.
Okay.
You know, I went on this massive rampage to begin with, and I, you know, found, I think I've got about 100 words so far in my list. Like I say, finding those websites that were untranslatable words or feelings, or speaking to friends, actually. A friend of a friend is Japanese, and she gave me a few great emotions. She was actually in my second podcast in the series, about an emotion called mono no aware, which is a kind of sadness at the passing of time. And it's inspired by the cherry tree blossoms in Japan coming and going with the seasons. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think sometimes you do meet the right person from different cultures and who can help you out a little bit. But it's a lot of Google, and it's a lot of different combinations of obscure emotion or what is a weird feeling, that kind of thing. There's not much science to it, I'll tell you that.
So a little more personally, you're a radio presenter in the UK on Fun Kids, which I understand is a radio station for children.
Yeah, I love it. It's hard to explain because people think it's kind of quite twee, or we only play nursery rhymes, but actually it's just normal radio with the swear words taken out of the songs. And then a few more Disney tunes added in. I'm on 4 till 7 every weekday, which is, I guess, drive time on usual stations. But Fun Kids, it's more like homework time.
Right.
So we have competitions. We play games. I get to interview some brilliant people. I do a lot of interviews with authors and celebrities, which is great. And get to do a lot of nonsense, fun things, which is, I mean, it's always fun. It's a very lovely place to work as well, and it's. I think people are surprised by how good it is, to be honest. I think I get a few messages from my friends who've got kids, and they're like, oh, we listened, and it's a great station. And I'm like, trying to tell you.
Do they tell you what they were expecting otherwise?
I think they expected a lot of, hello, boys and girls, how are you today?
Okay.
And it's not that. And it plays, like I say, contemporary music. And we played the Beatles the other day, and my friend was thrilled. So, you know, it does vary. But I was very keen to make something in my podcast that was not a children's aimed thing. Mm-hmm. So getting emotional is more for adults. I was going to say grown-ups, which makes it sound even more childish, really. So it's more focus on grown-ups. But yeah, it's a bit different to Fun Kids, just because I wanted a different challenge, really. Mm-hmm.
And I've read that you like chocolate and Belle and Sebastian. And I'll come back to the Belle and Sebastian part in a bit, and probably the chocolate part too. But I mean, what are the big differences between radio and podcasting for you? And, you know, maybe related to that is how your presenting approach differs for each of your audiences.
I think in both places, I am myself. I think that's really important. I think you know, on the radio, my family will listen, and that they think it's really funny because they're like, it's as if you're talking to us on the phone. Okay. They were like, there's no difference to how you are on the radio and how you are in person, which I think is a good thing. I think that's important. And I think on the podcast, similarly, it's just, I'm a little bit more able to put my personality in there because I'm not having to be aware that kids might be listening. Mm-hmm. So it's just a little easier to get some jokes in there or pop culture references or a few, older references, really. But I think also the difference for me is I like doing the podcast because I'm in charge.
Sure.
You know, the radio station, I'm very lucky to have some great producers and lovely bosses, but that means they have the final say about everything that happens. Whereas mm-hmm. I think I kind of wanted a challenge of like, well, if I was to make my own podcast, what would that sound like? Mm-hmm. And how would I put it together and how would it work? And that was half the battle and half the joy of it for me, was finding out how I would put it together and whether it was good or not. And I think that's the difference, is more I'm in control of it, basically.
And how has the podcast changed since you've, put it together and you've been doing it for a little while?
Yeah, well, originally it was just going to be me. And I was like, oh, each episode will be like 5 minutes max, really short episodes explaining the emotion. And then I thought, oh, it's really boring just hearing my voice all the time. Right? There's more interesting, exciting people out there. So the first immediate change was getting a guest. That was really quickly what I decided to do. Mm-hmm. I think as time has gone on as well, I've realized I've spoken to so many really good guests, it's harder and harder to edit them down. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm finding tricky, is getting the right, just remembering, having to keep it in mind that it is short. Like my idea was it has to be under 25-ish minutes, ideally 17, I think.
Why is that?
Because I get bored easily.
Okay.
and I think that I don't want to, I don't want other people to get bored. Mm-hmm. And
that's originally nice of you.
I just want those 5-star reviews, let's face it, Wendy. I think originally I'd asked some friends who work in podcasting, and they said, normally podcasts are between 30 to 60 minutes because you can listen to it on a commute or you can listen at the gym or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And I feel like, I think I'm not the only person who would like a shorter episode of a podcast. So the challenge has been, it started off quite short. They got a little longer. And now I think I'm changing. I'm just trying to figure out how to make it the right length for the quality and what I want it to sound like, basically. I think that's mm-hmm. how it's changed slightly, is the editing of it.
Okay. Gender and cultural ideas or expectations about emotion, and sometimes these are connected. What have you discovered about emotion and gender in your work on the show so far? Anything interesting or anything surprising that you didn't know before?
Well, I mean, like I said, the idea of getting emotional is always related to women, I think. Mm. I think when I started this, people assumed it was probably a female's podcast because it was, again, emotions, I think, are seen as sometimes as negative. Mm-hmm. And the idea that if you're getting emotional, it means you're crying in the bathroom. I think there is a gendered idea there that is a woman doing that, not a man. Mm-hmm. And I was very keen to prove that, men feel feelings as well. And also there is no shame in it. Mm-hmm. So I think that was really important to kind of like to make it as accessible as possible. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, I did an episode on gender euphoria, which is really interesting. I spoke to a trans writer, Laura Kate Dale, about feeling positive and happy in your body. And she was great and really helpful. And I think there's more out there. I'm sure there are more emotions out there to discover. But yeah, I think it's been a really interesting discovery.
Yeah, I think emotion and gender is probably in the midst of a big change at the moment, or at least I think so, and I hope so. But more broadly, I think our understanding of emotions must change over time, evolving or maybe devolving. I don't know. But Have you discovered anything interesting from your guests or your research about the history of emotional concepts or the history or evolution of our understanding of them? I mean, are there emotional concepts that went away, that don't exist anymore, that did long ago?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. There's a lot of very old English words. Like, I think there's a word which I can't quite remember the exact definition of, but there's mumpish and there's fellowfeel, okay, which are two very old English words for emotions that you wouldn't hear today. And I don't know whether that's because we've developed better ways of describing feelings, mm-hmm, or whether it's because people have forgotten to describe them. You know, I wonder whether there are feelings that are out there, like, I mean, the whole point of the podcast, feelings out there floating around that we just haven't defined properly, but are out there. So I know there's a lot of like 16th and 17th century words from Old English. And there's, I did a podcast about the feeling of when you wake up in the morning and mm-hmm, the kind of dread you feel. And that was an Old English word as well, which I found fascinating. And again, it's fallen out of use in England because I guess maybe now we have more words to describe it as well. But like, I woke up this morning and I felt sad, mm-hmm, rather than using one word to encompass everything. So maybe, yeah, it's interesting actually. Maybe things have changed and I don't necessarily think that's a good thing because I think sometimes it was nice to have more words to define exactly how you feel. I think, for example, I think in Japan there's a word for the emotion you feel and the guilt you feel when you owe someone money. Okay. Which is such a specific, you know, pinpointing that specific type of guilt, mm-hmm, is really interesting and really good. And I think that's an interesting thing that we don't have here, that kind of pinpointing of specific types of feelings, mm-hmm, which is kind of what I wanted to explore, I guess.
I think one of your early episodes, your guest discusses the role of technology in perhaps inciting new feelings and new words, and if I have the word right, femdalen,
yeah. Okay.
So this idea of taking a photo and realizing afterwards it's like the photo that everyone else took of, you know, the Eiffel Tower. Are there other interesting ideas you've heard from your guests that you think deserve more exploration? Sorry.
Oh man, every episode, every week, okay, I will interview someone and I'll go into it having researched the emotion and thinking, okay, this is what I think of it. These are the questions I'm going to ask. I will hope to get this answer or that answer, or like, let's hope that it leads to this place. And every week without fail, someone will give me some answers and I'm like, oh, I didn't think of that. Oh. And then I have to rewrite my whole episode entirely. Which is lovely, to be fair, because it means that it keeps me on my toes.
Yeah.
The episode I think you mean is with Rankin, who is a really great photographer. And he was the first person I interviewed for the podcast. And we spoke for over an hour, bearing in mind the podcast is about 15 minutes long. And that was hard to edit because he gave me so many amazing thoughts. And I remember listening back, mm-hmm, to it and thinking, oh, he's gone into it in a different direction that I went into. Mm-hmm. Which is great. I mean, I interviewed a comedian called Bilal Zafar recently about the emotion of phago, which is kind of a sadness of caring for somebody, but knowing they will eventually leave you. Mm-hmm. And again, he gave me some just because he had done that. He'd worked in a care home. And so he'd actually gone through the emotion. And, you know, he gave me some thoughts that I just didn't really consider. So that's why I love having guests. And I'm so glad it's not just me because, you know, having somebody to bounce off and give ideas to is much more interesting, I think.
Are there any English words that are used outside of the UK that give you a very strong emotional reaction?
English words as in English words about feelings.
Yeah, so maybe an American English word or something you've come across or heard in Ireland or Australia. Another English-speaking culture, I suppose, and a word used, and you think, what?
There's a lot of interesting American words.
Oh, no.
But more just like kind of definitions and words that I've come across and been like, oh, I get that. Like, There was a word from America that was, well, an emotion that was horn mad. If you're really, really angry and cross about something, you're horn mad.
Okay.
And there's a few words, yeah. I mean,
is that
I think
from the Midwest, maybe?
I don't know. I think it's from like I forget, it's not one I've researched massively, but it's from like the 30s, I think.
Okay.
And there's a few emotions. There was one about the sadness you have even when you're wealthy. This is a debatable emotion, I guess. But I think it's come from America, and it's pronoia, which is the opposite to paranoia, when you feel like everybody's saying something good about you behind your back. And pronoia has really stuck with me. I don't know why, but I find that idea fascinating, that somebody's out there being like, the world loves me and I'm feeling pretty great about it. Like, I just find that really interesting. Yeah. Well, pronoia, I'm pretty sure it's American. Yeah.
I'll stay tuned for that episode. It sounds really bizarre. Well, yeah. Can we come back to Belle and Sebastian?
Always. We always absolutely can.
I think music more generally, but music is emotional and it can be a mood enhancer, whether that's mm-hmm. an upper or a downer, and even an influence on the stability of our emotional state. What kind of mood are you in when you listen to Belle and Sebastian? Or I guess, what sort of mood does Belle and Sebastian generally create for you?
So my friends and family, nobody loves Belle and Sebastian like I do, Wendy. Okay. I love them so much. As in, like, my friends and family just don't get it at all.
Noted.
I know there are other big fans out there. And people take the mickey out of me quite a lot because they think it's sad, fey indie music. Direct quote from one of my friends. It's one of those weird things. Me, Belle and Sebastian to me is comfort music. It's like a hug. It's like whenever I listen to any of their songs, I am being looked after. So okay. When I'm sad, it feels like I've got a friend there, kind of just with their arm around my shoulder. When I'm happy, it feels like the most joyful music in the world. I put it on sometimes on the train so I can sleep, and it's nice music to listen to as I go to sleep. I honestly could listen to them anywhere at all, and it's like I say, it's a hug, it's a friend next to me.
Okay. Are there other artists or music that you listen to for different moods?
The ones that Belle and Sebastian don't cover. I mean, I will always go for a little bit of pop music. I do love some upbeat Taylor Swift, some Lizzo. I find myself going to those female pop stars if I want a bit of a boost and if I want to feel empowered. Even Pat Benatar, you know?
Yes.
Hit Me With Your Best Shot. That's a great song. That's a great shout.
Pat's great.
Oh my God. Honestly, big fan. And then equally, I saw Robbie Williams this week. Again, big pop music fan. But then equally, if I want to really feel my feelings, Nick Drake is my guy.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, right. He's going to be the one I go to for those wearier times, I would say.
Good selection.
Yeah, bit of a combination of tunes there.
And the chocolate, what kind of mood is that related to? Milk or dark? Nuts?
Literally anything. The only problem is I'm allergic to nuts, so I have to make sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I went to a chocolate factory in York a little while ago, and they were so nervous about anything having nuts in, which it didn't. Everybody else got like proper slabs of chocolate to try, and I got given a Disney princess lollipop.
Oh no.
So sad. But no, I've been to many chocolate factories. I love it. Honestly, again, I could eat it for breakfast, lunch and dinner, and my friends and family do not understand it at all. They are genuinely concerned for my welfare. The station, Fun Kids, when I go in there, they often have chocolate and crisps and sweets and stuff, and I'm not really a crisp fan, not really a sweet fan, but if they have chocolate, I will grab it with both hands. I'll be like, thanks guys, cheers, see you later, bye, pop it in my pockets, see you later. I've always been a big chocolate fan. Yeah, I just always, like I say, I'm not bothered about sweets, just, oh gosh, I love chocolate so much.
Perhaps you would love to know that here in the Netherlands there is a very thin slice of what I call breakfast chocolate that you put on top of a slice of bread. So
you have
a slice of bread, some butter, and then this like slab of chocolate that goes on top. And that's your breakfast. It's generally
for
kids.
How have I never known this? Well, I mean,
now you do.
Kids in Big Adults.
You're booking your trip over here soon, aren't you, Bex?
Oh my, you've blown my mind. I mean, as somebody who will happily buy many, many pan of chocolates, will smear any kind of chocolate she can onto anything, like, as you know, put spread Biscoff onto chocolate. That's blown my mind. I didn't know that existed. Oh, wow.
Are there other foods that incite strong emotional responses for you?
I love going to restaurants and to hotels. I grew up, my dad was a hotel manager. Okay. So we'd go to a lot of hotels as a kid. And I think anytime I'm in a hotel that reminds me of those places, those restaurants, particularly breakfasts, I think. Okay. When you're at a hotel breakfast with the buffet and you've got a full English breakfast and toast and someone's giving you coffee, mm-hmm. I think that reminds me in a lovely way of like growing up and of traveling with my parents and kind of going around the country and sitting with them, even though I would have been very young, but they would happily have still let me sit with them in the fancy restaurants, which was very good of them. But I was pretty well behaved because I knew that I'd always get toast. So I was always...
You really liked toast.
Love toast. Well, to be honest, any food. But yeah, I think those kind of restaurants and those hotels, it gives me a really strong, positive, lovely feeling and of nostalgia, I suppose.
Okay. Do you explore any physical sensations that come along with emotions in the podcast?
Yes, it's interesting. So limerence that I mentioned before, mm-hmm. that can come with physical sensations. If you're in the presence of somebody that you really like, you'll start stuttering, or you know, you'll shake a little bit, you'll quiver perhaps. Mm-hmm. So that was a really interesting one. I think there was an emotion I discussed, and I've totally forgotten the name of it, with a lovely doctor, and it was all about a sadness in the world. Let me find it here because I do have it in front of me. Tosca, that was it. Dr. Sophie Moore. And it's a Russian feeling of like a sadness, but not really knowing why. And that can be, I think that can manifest in lots of ways, both mental and physical, of like crying, you know, not wanting to get out of bed, feeling very emotional physically, and not just kind of keeping it to yourself. And it's really interesting with that. She said a really good way of working through it is by journaling. She said writing a journal and keeping diaries, and which is not something I'd really heard about before, but she said it's been even known to help to deal with asthma. Hang on a second. My dog is massively barking. I apologize.
We've had many dogs on Metapod. Don't worry.
Oh, my goodness. Sorry. Yes, but I was just saying Dr. Sophie is an amazing doctor. And yeah, she suggested journaling as something that would be really good to help you work through physical manifestations of stress. And yeah, she said it could even help you improve your asthma, which was not something I'd ever heard before. But she was great at talking about that as well. And it's like I say, it's interesting going back to experts, mm-hmm. not just people who've necessarily felt things, but to talk to people like her and give actual practical advice on how to work through those kind of physical manifestations of your emotion. It's great.
Right. If you could create a word for something that you've felt, but you have a hard time describing, what would it be? Any ideas?
Oh, man. That's a great question. And actually one I was thinking of for the podcast, but to ask my guests. But I don't know. I mean, that would be a fun thing to do. I'm trying to think of anything that I think there must be something out there I haven't found, but a feeling of gratefulness and pure love for your friends. I think there must be something that we could coin to mean how joyful you are having such good friends. I think there is something in that, but I don't know what the word would be. I mean there may well be a word for it, but from my research I haven't found anything that means a particular joy, gratefulness, happiness, love of your friends. You know, I found words that mean, you know, embarrassment you have when somebody posts something awkward on social media, one of your friends posts something on social media, and I've seen the pride you have in somebody doing something great, mm-hmm. but I don't think I've seen an emotion about joy, gratefulness, happiness that you have your friends in your life. So I think I'd want something around that. I think that's what I'd try and invent.
Okay, sounds good. And do you have a favorite emotion or feeling or concept that has been featured on the show so far? Or are they all your favorites?
Well, I mean, I'd like to say they're all my favorites, but going back through them, I mean, there's so many really interesting ones. I really enjoyed chatting about Brabant with Nish. There was an emotion called Too Much Birthday, which was a made up one, obviously, quite recently. But one I really enjoyed was Zisu, which is Finnish. And it's a kind of gumption. It's a kind of carrying on with something, going through with it, even though you know it might not work out and you might fail. Mm-hmm. It's a feeling of just kind of sticking with it, I think. And it's a bit like the British version of like blitz spirit. You know, you've got to keep going. You've got to keep that thing and keep on. And I spoke to an amazing professor in America, actually, who was working for a Finnish university. And Claire Balding, who's a TV presenter here. And that was, I think, the episode I'm most proud of, because I thought it was interesting to research. The people I spoke to were great. And I think I came out of it really feeling like I'd crafted something quite nice.
Okay. So what's coming up for Getting Emotional? Anything you want to tell Metapod listeners?
Hopefully some more episodes. I've been very lucky this year. I got silver at the British Podcast Awards, which was a real bonus, and it made me kind of validated, like I said before, you know, having my own decisions and making something myself.
Great, yeah.
It validated that, so it spurred me on to make some more episodes. I think in an ideal world, I'd love to make it into a book of some sort. Okay. Like a coffee table book or something. That would be a lovely thing to do, to collate all of the emotions, where they're from, and maybe a few quotes from the people I've spoken to about them. I think that would be a really nice thing to do. So that would be my next idea, I think.
And you're on social media, I'm assuming.
Yes, everywhere. Oh my goodness, can't get rid of me. I am at Bex Lindsay, so Bex Lindsay. You can all spell. And then I'm on Twitter and Instagram as well, Get Emotional Pod and Getting Emotional Podcast.
Okay. Well, Bex Lindsay of Getting Emotional, the podcast, thank you so much. I'm really happy you could join me on Metapod.
I'm honestly thrilled that you invited me. I'm dead chuffed. Thank you so much. And I've really enjoyed chatting about the podcast.
Thanks for listening to Metapod. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at The Metapod Show and subscribe at any of the usual places you find your other favourite podcasts. You can follow Metapod on Instagram at Metapod Show or visit our website, metapodshow.com.
This episode of Metapod was recorded, edited, and produced by me, Wendy Morrill.